everybody. This is Dana Grinnell from the Tattoo Buddha, and I'm here today with Brent Oliver and Jack. And if Jack, would you tell me how to pronounce your last name, please?
Whidden.
Whidden. Okay. And Jack has a pretty cool project that he let us know about called Beyond the Cushion. And so we wanted to ask him a little bit more about this project. Jack is from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And part of the project involves some travel and some photos. He's a photographer by trade. So Jack, could you tell me a little bit more about your project?
Sure. Try and figure out where to start. But I'll start just, a little bit of my own history with Buddhism and the practice. I definitely think that has an influence on me, doing the project. And so, I came to America when I was about five, both my parents, from Vietnam. And so I came out and then, both my parents are, they were practicing Buddhism in Vietnam. And then when they came to America, they, found some Asian communities to practice. And obviously I kind of grew up in that setting. Going to temples and things like that on Sundays and what have you. And obviously being young didn't obviously resonate with me. And, being 5 years old, I assimilated pretty quickly to American culture. And so, culturally, that was also a big disconnect for me. And so that was sort of backstory of my experience with Buddhism a little bit. And then obviously as I got older, for me, whether it's by karma or what have you, I started becoming interested in sort of, the first introduction to just Eastern philosophy was the Tao Te Ching, which is Stephen Mitchell's book. I kind of remember picking that book up in college. But really, the start of me with Buddhism was really Sun Shu Shuki's Beginner's Mind. I kind of got that book, as I was graduating college and that book was sort of very eye-opening experience. And I think obviously having some context with Eastern philosophy and reading that book definitely piqued my interest in Buddhism, not necessarily the meditation part or anything like that. But for, again, as I kind of, finished college and begun to, start my career, that was always sort of running in my mind in terms of my interests. And being at that time in the Bay Area, I had obviously a lot of resources in terms of exploring, different lineages. And so I was fortunate to go to Spirit Rock, which is in Northern California, on many occasions in my 20s, going to a lot of, week-long retreats, short retreats, weekend retreats. And so I started in the Vipassana tradition with Buddhism and meditation. And obviously, a lot of the teachers there and a lot of the community in the, Northern California were, obviously, again, typical of, Buddhism in the West, which is, a lot of more middle-aged, sort of upper-class, individuals. And so that was, just part of my experience, sort of discovering Buddhism in Northern California. And then I think at one point in one of my retreats at Spirit Rock, there definitely was an insight from that retreat where, I think for me, the struggle of really my own identity and really connecting with the teachings, knowing that I came from Asia and also with my own parents, but also really seeing, the people around me, not necessarily resonating with the Sangha and from that perspective, sort of planted the seed of really how to find my own, path within the Dharma in the West. And so that is sort of, I remember distinctly having that thought and sort of putting that aside for quite some time. So again, for me, that definitely sat in the back of my mind for probably 10 to 15 years as I was sort of, beginning to kind of deepen my practice with more meditation and really around, I'm trying to think the exact time, but probably within 10 years of my Buddhist practice, I did get introduced to Tibetan Buddhism via Sogyal Rinpoche. He had done a retreat at Spirit Rock for more sort of established practitioners. And I think that was definitely another turning point in my Buddhist practice. in terms of you know, sort of, you know, being introduced to a different style of meditation, but also getting, you know, sort of very sort of quote unquote advanced empowerments in that retreat that just kind of made me feel like, you know, as much as I, you know, appreciated sort of the Vipassana insight meditation style, when I got sort of after that retreat with Seshwami Rinpoche, I kind of pretty much pivot to Tibetan Buddhism and started really exploring that lineage. And for a while, you know, again, you know, kind of went with Seshwami Rinpoche, a lot of, you know, number of his retreats and, you know, with his brother, Mingo Rinpoche. And then finally sort of settled down with a Sangha in California with Aman Tupan and in Port Richmond in terms of sort of a local Sangha. But so that was, again, the last 10 years of my Buddhist practice. And then for me, the project really began to kind of take shape about 3 or 4 years ago. As I, you know, sort of became more mature in my practice, as well as my own business. I had started a photography business agency and doing a lot of corporate work and beginning to feel kind of really sort of that sense of not finding meaning, even though I was running my own business and doing photography, which I love. I just didn't feel like, you know, that was as meaningful as it could be. And so that I, you know, so that seed that it was sort of planted, you know, a long while ago began to feel like, okay, there was a sense of urgency that I need to begin to work on this, even though it's sort of not something I've done before in terms of, you know, originally it was a sort of a coffee book concept in terms of obviously coming from a photography background and really, you know, focusing on, you know, from the visual history of, you know, what Buddhism looks like in the West. And so for me, again, being a photographer, I wanted to do sort of a visual documentation in sort of the homage of sort of the documentary photographers that I sort of admired. So that was about 3 or 4 years ago when I started to kind of begin to collate and really begin to start reaching out to people to begin to work on the project as a coffee book. But then as the project progressed, I realized that, you know, the irony is that, you know, photography could take 5 to 10 minutes or, you know, at most 20 to 30 minutes to get a good portrait. And obviously, you know, if I was going to be traveling and begin to kind of get to know people and interview people, I felt like I really need to incorporate their stories into the projects. And that's really where the video piece came into shape in terms of really documenting people's experience around themes of their spiritual journey. And so that was, again, in the last year and a half, I've begun to really incorporate their interviews and try to collate the themes that people talk about, whether, you know, it's from different lineages, different, gateways into Buddhism. And so begin to kind of collate. So the project grew considerably in terms of scope. But at the same time, you know, the original, you know, concept would still sort of I will produce a coffee book being the sort of the first milestone. But I think for me, as the project grew, the video interviews and really the stories of, you know, that people were telling were and capturing that through video was so much more compelling as a way to put really a face to the practice and really seeing how, you know, lay practitioners in the modern world integrate their practice. Because I think, you know, for me, one of the sort of angles that I, you know, wanted to focus was obviously being immersed in Buddhist sort of media and following Tricycle Alliance, where I felt like there's, you know, so many great teachers, so many great teachings available to, you know, to all of us that are practicing. But at the same time, I just didn't feel like, for me, part of the C2 was, you know, I didn't feel like there was sort of a perspective on really is in-depth perspective on how people were practicing, how they were discovering, and some of the challenges and the struggles they were facing in the practice. Because for me, those were some of the things I was experiencing, and not having a very, you know, consistent sangha, I felt like this was a way for, you know, people that are entering the path or curious about to really learn again from real life practitioners, you know, some of the challenges and sort of the fruit of their practice, to see again, you know, what does an embodiment of a practice looks like, you know, whether you're in the beginning of the practice or much later. And so that sort of brings us to kind of the modern, you know, sort of and to this year in terms of the project, obviously still continuing, but obviously being sort of impacted by the pandemic. Originally, I was just focused on capturing the video, and then obviously, you know, my business was severely impacted by the, you know, pandemic, and I couldn't afford to have a video editor or a research assistant, things like that. So I kind of had to bring all of that in-house. And the past year, I kind of learned video editing and begin to really pull together all these things that I have done around the project and really, you know, sort of hone my skills in terms of the capture, the interview process, and all the, and the editing process. So that's sort of where I'm at with the project.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Let me back up just a little bit. Earlier you mentioned that you started out, well, first of all, you started out in Vietnam, but you started getting into more of a Zen Buddhism originally. Is that right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then later on shifted over in Tibetan. And then it sounds like you maybe did a little bit of Vipassana in there as well. Is that right? Or...
Yeah, definitely. Like Spirit Rock was a Vipassana insight based sort of. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think I didn't really get into. I mean, there's obviously the San Francisco Zen Center in San Francisco, but I didn't necessarily was part of that sangha. So my Zen experience was pretty limited to sort of the book and sort of the philosophy, as opposed to, you know, going to a lot of Zen retreats.
Okay. Okay. I was just noticing there's a lot of different facets that you've had there. So I imagine that leads to a lot of your experiences meeting different people from different backgrounds, different types of Buddhism. And I like the idea that it's not only like a physical book, but it's also kind of a video type documentary thing. How many people have you interviewed so far?
Probably about 30, 35-ish, yeah.
And you said
Go ahead, Brent.
You said one of the things you were interested in was finding themes that kind of wove together some of the stories and the experiences that people have had. So if you've talked to, you know, 30 to 35 people, what are some recurring themes that you've noticed so far?
Yeah, I mean, when I started the project, kind of mapped out sort of some of the themes that I thought that would be interesting. And I think, obviously, I think one of the things that, you know, for me, that's still sort of formulating is really which are the themes are really the most compelling. I think some of the things that I'm trying to address through the project is, you know, from a sort of higher level, from a society level. You know, I think one of the aspects that you know, that I want to illustrate was really, you know, in historically how Buddhism going from, you know, in the East, going from, you know, India to Tibet to China, and how Buddhism, you know, sort of transforms based on that culture. And so from a society point of view, that was one narrative that I wanted to show in the project, which is coming to the West. You know, what does a transmission of Buddhism look like in terms of what modern people and sort of the lay practice looks like in the West? And so that was, you know, sort of the idea of demystifying Buddhism and really more broad in terms of, you know, obviously what the lineage looks like. So that's a really more a broad perspective of a theme. But I think the secondary sort of pillar of the project would really about what does a an authentic, you know, practice looks like in the West. I think, you know, obviously in the East there's a lot of you know, the institutions that's been around for a long time. There's a huge difference between the monastics and the lay practice, and in the West, you know, that separation is not as sort of divided. And so I think, you know, for me, the crush becomes, you know, what does an authentic practice, Buddhist practice, looks like, whether in whatever lineage that we have. And so try and explore, you know, with all the different gateways that people are introduced to Buddhism, whether it's to, you know, apps or, you know, AA meetings or at the university setting, once they decide to kind of pursue that path, you know, what are the components that, you know, make it a really authentic sort of practice in the West? I mean, I think with us having to juggle, you know, all the things that we do have to juggle in modern life, you know, what are those components that really allow us to really deepen our practice? Because for me, you know, for a long time, you know, I was sort of just mostly meditating and didn't really practice a lot of some of the other things that I had read about, and didn't realize sort of the significance of some of these practices, whether it's metta or, like for me, like now just doing Nundro, and it's like, wow, this is a huge part of the Vajrayana practice that I have not really, you know, really sunk my teeth into. And so, you know, on a personal level, you know, I was really exploring themes around, you know, what makes a practice enriching, how do we as lay practitioners really engage in that practice, whether it's through the Sangha, what are the different types of practices that are not just about meditation. And so these are themes that, you know, as I'm interviewing people, you know, I ask them about obviously how they discover Buddhism, the significance of, you know, the Sangha, the significance of how they integrated with their family, how does it show up. And so right now, like I said, there's definitely some themes that are more juicy than others in terms of really, you know, the significance of the Sangha was something that, you know, even though, like for me, in the back of my mind, I knew that was something that was, you know, sort of missing in my own practice. As I'm hearing people talk about how important that, you know, that Sangha is, you know, it's definitely something that, again, you know, I want to sort of highlight that particular theme more than some of the other themes. Like for me, for example, one of the themes that I started to explore then realized that, you know what, this is probably not significant, was like, okay, what's the impact of like the meditation apps and sort of some of these things that are out there, or even, you know, the personalities that are drawn to different types of lineages. Like I said, I thought that was an initial theme that I was trying to explore. But as I talked to people, like those kind of themes began to kind of feel like they weren't really significant to, you know, to really, you know, what an authentic practice looks like. So those are some things that I'm still kind of feeling out. And as I talk to more diverse people from different lineages, I think, you know, again, I'll probably, hopefully, there'll be at least, you know, 5 to 10 themes that really come out that are really strong, that obviously would make the book or like allow me to focus on certain essays around some of these themes that I find more, a little more interesting than some of the things I initially mapped out.
And do you find that more people have a Sangha, or more people are going it solo?
You know, based on the interview, I think the Sangha is definitely more people have a pretty strong support system in terms of the Sangha and how important that is to their practice. You know, for example, I was talking to a number of people from the Diamond Way, and they talked like how, even though obviously in Vajrayana, the teacher is very critical, that, you know, without the Sangha, they probably wouldn't be practicing, you know, and so that's really where, again, for me, that was really surprising with a number of people that talked about how, I mean, and one of the things that also was surprising around the Sangha was like, again, there's, you know, different lineages where the teacher doesn't play a critical role, and it's more of a peer-to-peer sort of, you know, role where, you know, in Tratnatna or even like with Tanya Han, again, you know, sort of the wisdom of their spiritual friends in the Sangha has, you know, has more significance to people's development than the teacher themselves. And so, yeah.
Now, suppose somebody listens to this podcast and they're like, wow, this is a really awesome project. I want to be in it. Like, how would they contact you to be a part of this project? Would they email you? Do you just accept anybody? Or is there any criteria that you would like to look for?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started the project, I was like, anybody and everybody would have been great. But obviously, I think, so one of my first milestones or sort of the parameters around the project, you know, some of the parameters, the boundaries I put around the project was, one, I wasn't going to sort of explore the Asian aspect of Buddhism in the West, you know, where my family and or like all these other, you know, sort of ethnic cultures, whether it's Tibetan, Thai, there's a lot of that. And obviously, you know, there's, you know, a lot of data around, you know, even though Buddhism, you know, is, you know, the 2/3 of the, you know, Buddhist practitioners are Asian, you know, in the West. And obviously for me, you know, knowing that experience, that was one area that I wasn't going to focus on just because I don't have access to all these different culture, you know, sort of ethnicities and the challenges of trying to kind of put together something like that. And so that was one parameter that I kind of put around. And part of for the book too, the other parameter was, you know, with the coffee book, I was going to sort of highlight the 108 best portraits. And so, you know, so that's the idea that, you know, with that sort of goal, I wanted to make sure that I wanted to be inclusive as much as possible with different types of lineages, people from those different socioeconomic backgrounds, different racial ethnicities. And so obviously, as I progress along the project, I'll probably have a little bit more discerning because I didn't want to have too many overlapping people from whether Zen, Tibetan Buddhism, like again, the first 20 people were from the Zen and Tibet, you know, Svarjana traditions. And so I was like, okay, now I have to be a little more selective in terms of, you know, what lineage they're coming from, you know, what's, you know, again, geographically is not as critical, but, you know, part of the project is I do want to try to cover as much of the US, whether it's the you know, the West, the South, you know, because I travel for my, you know, as a photographer, I travel quite a bit for work. And so geographically, there is a little bit of that component. I don't want obviously everybody from the West Coast. And so that's another parameter that I've kind of put around. So those are some of the key parameters I look for in terms of, and I think, but ultimately too, you know, when people that do reach out for me through on the website, there is a sort of participate form that they reach out to. But, you know, but for me, one of the best, you know, reference, you know, referrals is really, you know, when I reach out to sanghas in different cities, the people that run the sangha that, you know, that have been part of that sangha usually know people that might be interesting. And those personal referrals have been sort of the best resources for you know, interesting subjects. And again, for me, you know, part of it too, you know, even though there is sort of a little bit of a systematic approach to the project, at the end of the day, you know, as a photographer, I feel, and as, you know, as I'm capturing video, I think for me, the most compelling part of anyone's story, just how much it's impacted them. So again, and even if someone came from the same lineage or, you know, another, you came from the same socioeconomic class, again, if I sort of interview and sort of get to meet them and hear their stories and how that's impacted their life. And for me, that's the juiciest part of the project. It's not trying to be, you know, very, you know, and it's not going to be like academic where I'm trying to be, you know, representative of, you know, the percentages or, and so the, for me, you know, the story and how it's impacted their life is probably the most, one of the most compelling parameters for the project.
And do you interact with each? Well, that's maybe not the wrong way to or right way to approach it. Do you have a template of that standard that you go into each interview with and then sort of go with the flow? Or do you go into each one individual based on that particular person?
Yeah, there's definitely sort of a map that I kind of work from, like based on the themes that I kind of have in my head. You know, I usually do a couple pre-production meetings with people that are interested to kind of obviously know their background a little bit about how they discovered the practice. And so through that pre-production process interview, I kind of figure out, you know, these are some of the common themes that people do talk about, whether it's obviously their teacher, their sangha, how they discover it. But also, you know, I kind of try to keep it free form in the sense of there's definitely, I don't want to pigeonhole everybody to sort of like, okay, everybody has the same experience. And so I let them sort of drive the story. And so if there's something interesting, whether it's through their personal challenges, you know, whether it's through how it's sort of impacted, you know, what their work experience, their professional lives. So based on each one's, you know, individual experience, I try to have a combination of what's unique to this person and let them share that story around that practice, their practice, because everyone's going to have sort of different aspects that has more meaning, whether some people have a lot of retreat experience, some people don't do retreats, or so, you know, so that's a combination of, again, coming to it with some sort of roadmap, but at the same time, kind of keep it also a little bit open so that they, their unique experience are able to share as well.
Could you give, and maybe, I don't know if this would be something that would come easy to you or not, but would you be able to give an example of, so far you said you've interviewed about 30 people, one person that really stood out, or one story that really stood out that made you go, whoa, this is pretty cool, or this is really amazing? Is there anything that comes to mind?
There's a couple stories for sure. Like I said, I think there's, you know, I think for me, you know, I think one of the things that kind of sort of, when as a photographer and as a visual person, you know, I think, you know, talking to people about sort of their spiritual practices, usually as a photographer, not the most sort of visually, you know, enticing thing. And so obviously, and even again, one of the things that also surprised me too, is that, you know, I think with our practice, there isn't, you know, sort of this sort of like mystical power, and we're beginning to, and so there isn't like that aspect of like, wow, you know, this practice allows me to have superpowers, or like this person is sort of, you know, is sort of, you know, 10th level Buddha yogi or something like that. So I haven't met those, that person yet, but I think, you know, what you know, the stories I do hear that really makes it really worthwhile is that, you know, I think, you know, the practice, you know, when I interview people and try to dig out those nuggets of like how, you know, for me, it's like, oh, I want to hear something really powerful or really, you know, engaging. And many times, you know, I think when I do people do answer, it's not this sort of these mind blowing experiences that are going to be like, wow, you know, this is, you know, such an awesome practice and I'll become a millionaire or become enlightened, and, you know, with 10 years of experience. And so when people share these experiences with how, you know, for the most subtle things, whether it's how they, you know, sort of navigate their family life or, you know, their partners, and how they sort of integrate that practice, is for me part of sort of, you know, trying to demystify the practice, which is, again, I'm not trying to position, you know, Buddhism as sort of like something that is sort of this sort of mystical sort of aspect of it. I think there's a lot of obviously practical rewards of meditation practice, but even again along the path, again, the rewards are so subtle that, you know, that again, I think what I want to hopefully people are able to sort of imbued from hearing protection, hearing people that have been practicing for a long time, is really to get a sense of that equanimity that people experience through the challenges. You know, for example, one of the, you know, one of my earlier subject, she is a musician, and, you know, I went to her a number of times, and she was kind of this sort of, you know, was born, not born, but she got, you know, discovered the, you know, the practice at a very young age, married a Tibetan Lama, and was really, yeah, and so her stories were pretty sort of out there from a, you know, non-typical Buddhist experience, because, you know, a lot of us are going to marry a Lama and live with seven wolves and things like that. So it's one of the things where obviously she stood out in terms of like being very unique and has a very rich Buddhist experience. But at the same time, you know, I'm not trying to find those kind of people that are like, again, superstars around the practice, whether it's sort of, the rich, so celebrities around the practice, because ultimately I want it to be, I want other people to resonate with really everyday people that have regular jobs, that work, you know, regular professions. And so I don't want to really sort of like, you know, really highlight those kind of, profiles, even though, you know, I've encountered one or two of them. I want to make it so that, again, when people hear these stories, that these stories resonate with their background, with where their challenges are, and these aren't celebrities that have, you know, or have, you know, 30 years of experience in order to get to this state of being. These people have regular jobs and juggle all these things. And obviously those enable to assimilate the practice in sort of an ordinary situation, as opposed to, again, in our culture, when we can kind of see, you know, celebrities talk about their success and, you know, like on the back of their head, oh yeah, they probably have, you know, 10 assistants in the back of their head and they can meditate 3 hours a day. Of course, like, no, that's not the case for regular people. So I don't want to make it like, you know, again, that, you know, with the people that I do interview, that it is accessible through to, again, normal lay practitioners.
Do you find that you've run across a lot of diversity in racial, economic backgrounds so far in who you found?
Not as much as I like to. Again, I've been intentional in trying to reach out to different lineages, people from different backgrounds. But again, I've been having to turn away people that, you know, coming from a lot of sort of the Tibetan tradition or the Zen tradition, or and so that's definitely been a challenge for the project to really find people. And that's obviously part of why I'm trying to outreach to sort of media to kind of get a little more visibility around the project, hopefully to get more people interested in sharing their story. Like I said, I feel like trying to, you know, have a spreadsheet of, you know, people's different backgrounds and things like that, but it's definitely been pretty challenging to define people from different backgrounds. So even different lineages too. Again, as I reach out to, like, you know, other lineages, whether it's SGI or some of these sort of lesser known lineages, they haven't been as receptive to sort of and so that's something that. For me, not being an author, not being a well-known photographer, you know, having all this sort of, you know, aspect, I mean, obviously the website helps in terms of opening doors, but at the same time, I think, you know, and I think, again, our spiritual practice for me is, you know, I know that a lot of it is, you know, in our practice, it's not something we typically talk about or share with people outside our sangha. And so that's also another, you know, obstacle, because again, it's not something that we typically brag about, or, you know, it's usually a very private practice. And so between sort of those aspects, you know, it's been not as, you know, easy as I thought it would be to find subjects.
I have a feeling after this is published, you might get a couple people interested. I could see that happening. Definitely with the Tattooed Buddha Facebook group and everything, there's a pretty wide variety of people in there. So might be able to catch some people in there.
Yeah.
Brent, did you have any other questions?
I did, but I didn't write it down. So now it has kind of fallen straight out of my mind. So when you say you've turned away some folks that are in the more Vajrayana lineages, is that mainly because you're looking for sort of well-balanced representation and you're finding more Vajrayana practitioners than any other kind of practitioners right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure why that's the case, but like when I do reach out to sanghas, like they seem to be more open to, you know, sort of sharing the project with their sangha members, and people seem to be more receptive to sharing their stories. And so, so I'm not sure why that's the case. And honestly, for me, I do have a pretty strong interest in Vajrayana being sort of the practice, my practice. But obviously, again, there's still quite a few number of lineages that I wanted to get a little more insight into. And again, I think, you know, I'm not sure how it's going to pan out proportionally when the project's done. But hopefully, again, to have enough diversity, from the different, from the three vehicles of Buddhism to really showcase, again, no matter what lineage you have, you know, sort of, you know, take refuge with whatever teacher, there is sort of a sense of a commonality that hopefully people could see, appreciate based on, you know, the practices. Yeah.
Well, is there anything that we haven't asked that you wish we would have, or anything that you'd like to put out there that we haven't touched on yet?
Yeah, you know, for me, I think one of the things that, you know, that because I don't come from an academic background, not having a lot of, you know, academic knowledge, you know, when I first started a project, I was, you know, interested in reading a couple books around Buddhism. I think I talked to Ann Gleed, who had a book come out recently about, you know, American Dharma in the West specifically. And so for me, I think, you know, and really working on this in a very sort of solo endeavor, not having a lot of collaborators per se, you know, I'm always looking for sort of more input around what is sort of some of the themes that are compelling based on people's own experience. And so that's something that I'm still grappling with, and to try to get a little more input so that it's not such a, you know, part of me, like, you know, wants to trust, you know, my intuition, but at the same time, you know, ultimately I want to be as beneficial as possible through, you know, through the project. And so really hearing people's feedback around, you know, what are some of the themes or some of the things that is significant to their practice. So that those kind of feedback would be something that, you know, from obviously everything's gonna be, you know, not necessarily like a, you know, Gallup poll around the, you know, the project, but at the same time, I think, you know, people that have been, you know, whether it's in, you know, Tattoo Buddha, that community, or some of the, you know, some of the, you know, people that are a little more immersed in, you know, sort of the trends or of Buddhism, is, you know, getting that kind of feedback about what is worthwhile sort of, you know, sort of highlighting a little more, as opposed to me kind of figuring it out on my own and take a little longer than necessary. So that's, you know, one question that, you know, that, you know, again, I'm really looking for a lot more feedback around.
Did you just shush me, Dana?
No, my son just walked in. I was letting him know that we're to be quiet. Go ahead.
So what else have you got, Dana? What do you think?
Well, my thoughts also just went out the window. What was I going to say? Oh, I know. I do have another question. You had mentioned before, Jack, that you were looking for possibly someone to help collaborate with you, maybe as a writer or something. Is that something you were still interested in looking for, or did you find somebody?
Yeah, I'm definitely still looking for a collaborator from sort of the right as a writer. Again, I know there's definitely, it's not my forte by any means. And so obviously that would be, you know, a person that could help, you know, a little bit, obviously from a strategic point of view in terms of the themes and really collating, you know, the themes that I have begun to kind of map out and then really stitch together, you know, these different interviews in a way that, you know, is more presentable. Honestly, for right now, you know, the way I structured the website, the project is really more of like a browse directory kind of thing where people just click on a certain theme, they hear people talk about certain themes. But obviously I feel like, you know, for the coffee book and you know, for the coffee book and some of the video essays I want to put together, really want to have a more cohesive narrative around, you know, how to explore these themes in a way that is, you know, more, you know, sort of more has a stronger narrative than people just randomly clicking on the theme. And so yes, definitely something that I'm looking for still.
Awesome. Well, I think that sums up everything. I really appreciate you sitting down with us and talking to us about this project. I think it's going to be really cool. I know I told you that before. You know, when I saw your site and started getting an idea what you're doing, I think once you're done, it's going to have a lot of effect on a lot of different people. And I like the visual of everything, and just, you know, what you've been saying about showing a lot of different people from a lot of different lineages and different practices, and it's very impressive. So I really appreciate you sharing this with us a lot. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity, Dana, to really be part of, you know, of your podcast, and for you to really invite me to here and really share the sort of the project, because I think obviously I think for all of us who are practitioners, and really to for me, again, it is part of my, you know, practice. You know, ultimately, you know, for me, this is, you know, not something that I'm gonna get done in a couple years. It's kind of, you know, again, for me, it's part of my spiritual practice. And so to have people that are obviously practicing and to be open to give me feedback around that, I really appreciate. And that gives me sort of more motivation to continue doing, you know, sort of this work, so that, again, you know, I think in our day and age, I know that, you know, again, you know, as practitioners, you guys are probably know sort of the challenges that, you know, that we are as a society and the world faces. And obviously our practice is such a, you know, for me, such a powerful sort of refuge that I think, for the more that we could share, you know, the practice, the hopefully the better it could be for the world. So yeah, so I really appreciate you having me.
And I'll include your website in the show notes, and you know, any other links in your bio and everything, so everybody can go check everything out and see who Jack is and see his, you know, awesome photography and this great project. So thank you again, and
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Great to meet you.
Bye, Brent.